Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On Battlestar Galactica Season 2. For more information about the links and news we talk about on the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Welcome!
Hey.
Welcome, everybody!
For the very first time, this like is a geekling.
The thing is, he's wearing
scratching
you my geek.
Air move. Scratching.
The thing
hello,
is, air
my
scratching.
Geeklings.
The thing is, Don is wearing the white lingerie here in our studio.
Hey, I have pink taffeta on, and I'm proud of it.
Yeah, and rolling
and
around
the
on the
gloves
floor.
And lots of beads.
Yes, I thought it was attractive.
This week is a very special Geeks On.
Special, like short bus special.
Yes.
Special because we are talking about
my favorite show on television,
Battlestar.
Wait, no, you did not. Wait a second. What was the name of the first episode of Geeks On? Does anyone remember?
I think it's Aaron doesn't watch Battlestar.
Yeah. Why Aaron should watch Battlestar Galactica. And Aaron just admitted that Battlestar is his favorite TV show. On
here we are over a year later, and now Aaron is
2 years
preaching
later.
To the chorus.
He's
have we passed our 2 year anniversary?
No, but
we started of January 2005.
But we have gone through two seasons of Battlestar though.
That's true.
True.
That is a good point.
So we are going to have to do something special for our 2 year anniversary of Geeks On in January.
Excellent.
I don't know what.
Fireworks.
I think we should all have the day off and have four of our fans come in and do the show.
Okay.
How about this? We do a very special extra short episode.
Yeah.
Where it's under an hour. A very special
Thousands
Geeks
of
On.
Fans groaned out in Geekland.
How about everybody's Geek Week?
I found the video game that I did a voiceover for, and I went in and I'm playing this game, and I did it on the sly, and I put
Is
it under...
Is it a fighting game?
It's a fighting game.
Okay.
And I go through the whole thing, and I
Which
get...
Which game is this? Sorry.
I can't tell you. Oh. I can't tell it on the air. But I get through the whole thing. I get almost to my character, and then I have to go, and my PlayStation freezes right before I get to my character, and I lose everything.
Wait, you can't... This hasn't been released?
No, it's been released.
Well, why can't you talk about something that's been released?
Because I did it under a different name.
Oh.
That was Peter Robinson speaking.
Oh, yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Okay.
The fact that you're talking
your
about
pseudonym is your pseudonym is actually Donald Aaron Peterson. Isn't
yes,
it?
It's Donald Aaron Peterson.
I thought
okay.
so.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I it's can't like believe Yosef you're Bridge. About this.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, I got it now.
Yeah, it. Aaron's a little slow.
I don't even know about a new fighting game that's out. I'm totally behind the
You'll
loop on
have
this.
Have to think about it.
You have to ask him about it afterwards.
Exactly.
It's not
I'm
like
way too. Okay, we just moved this week. My my video game company moved locations. Right.
Yeah. This mysterious video game company.
This mysterious video game company. Those of you who have listened to the show, long story short, hi, I'm Don. I'm a geek, and I am a video game professional and a writer here in Hollywood, and. Part of that is, you know, like all of us, I have to sign non-disclosure agreements up the yin-yang in order to do my job. So I will never name the company that I work for those of you who are new to our show. But to give you the inside scoop on the video game industry, you know, and Aaron to give you the inside scoop on the film industry and Peter on writer stuff. And, you know, it's just we can't tell you. We can't tell you these things.
I can almost get myself in trouble, but I'm not.
Yeah, I mean... There are certain things we can and can't talk about. We make sure we don't cross the line so that we can continue doing our jobs.
But we should introduce ourselves since John and Don, you started it.
That's true.
All right.
Can like, I won't tell
again?
You. I
you
won't
can introduce
you.
Yourself again.
As the officially the largest geek here, I get two introductions. Hi, my name is Don. I am a writer and video game professional here in Hollywood, and I am a geek.
My name is Matt. I am an actor here in Los Angeles, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Peter, and I'm a screenwriter here in Los Angeles and a filmmaker, and I am a geek.
And I'm Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a filmmaker and graphic designer here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Hello, my geeks.
We are Geeks On.
So what I was so excited about is we moved, and like, you know how whenever you move, you find stuff that you forgot you had?
Did you find that
I didn't
sock?
Realize that happened for companies, too. Like, we moved, they pulled out this, like, this conference table, and they're like, oh, look, a television, and an Xbox dev kit, and a PlayStation. I didn't know we had any consoles. So now I'm sitting there looking at all those things going like, now I can kick all of the young whippersnappers' asses bragging about their Soul Calibur aptitude.
Did you mention that on the show last week?
Yeah, might have.
Yeah, okay. So you got to whoop some ass and then bring it in and tell us how the ass whooping was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is this Soul Calibur 2 or 3?
They're bragging about Soul Calibur 3.
Okay.
So I may be at a bit of a deficit because I don't like Soul Calibur 3 all
that's
that
much. The functional one that's
because
like,
it's different.
Well, no, it's like
because
no,
they tried
block.
To be Tekken.
Yeah.
You know? If you don't play
like
fighting
Tekken.
Games, you don't know. It's hard to explain if you don't play fighting games, but there are like three major fighting games
franchises
that can really be considered to be like the forefathers of all fighting games.
Right.
As far as 3D goes, there's the Tekken group, there's the Virtua Fighter group, and there's the Soul Calibur group.
Correct.
And the
Dead or Alive doesn't fit.
Dead or Alive sucks ass.
Well, I know, but it's kind of a big
sort of a
it's Virtua Fighter knockoff.
It's a novelty fighter.
Okay.
It's not really like a hardcore fighter gamers
game.
Sure. You know? But Tekken has been the most commercially successful of all of them.
Yes.
So it's a little heartbreaking to watch Soul Calibur, which hands down had the smoothest, most intuitive, pleasant game style of all three of them, try to be Tekken.
Right. You know? I really like Tekken.
I like Tekken.
Because
too.
I whoop ass at Tekken.
Because you like memorizing strings.
Yeah, that's true.
You have a passion for it.
I do.
Well, like me, I'm like, fighting game is.
I just want to be able to interrupt your string and maim you. And if I haven't memorized your string, I can't do that.
Yes. Don has his three moves, which he learns.
I am the Pokey Pokey Master.
And then he does those three moves over and over and over again like a genius. Like a genius. I mean, it could be the worst move in the entire world, but he'll find a way to gouge your eye out with it.
Right. I'm like the drunken master type where I just hit buttons and it just works.
Yeah. It's so frustrating playing
you're a savant, for God's sake.
It's ridiculous how good you are not knowing what the hell you're doing. I remember the last time you used, I think it was Liu Fang. I'm sitting there watching the character going like, I didn't even know he could do that.
Yeah. Wow.
What do you mean he has monkey style?
Excellent.
All righty. How about some geek news?
Why don't we do that? Robert Anson Wilson needs our help.
Yeah.
This is a bummer. Basically, this is from a blog by Douglas Rushkoff.
Who is a friend of his.
Yes.
And he's also a writer, I believe, as well.
Yes. He says, I hope people I've inspired with my work would band together to help me out in my later years if I needed it, which is at least part of the reason why I'm sending what I can do to support cosmic thinking patriarch Robert Anton Wilson, whose infirmity and depleted finances have put him in the precarious position of not being able to meet next month's rent. Now, if you do not know, Robert Anton Wilson wrote Cosmic Trigger. He also wrote the Illuminatus trilogy. Mm-hmm.
The holy grail of conspiracy books and conspiracy theorists, you know, around the world. I mean,
and Schrodinger's cat, which I enjoyed.
Yes,
right, exactly.
And basically, what he says is, right now, Bob is a human being in a rather painful flesh suit who needs our help. I refuse for the history books to say he died alone and destitute. For I want future generations to know we appreciated Robert Anton Wilson while he was alive. Basically, he's got a severe disease, and it's eating him away, and it's eating away his finances, and he can't afford it. And he won't. He will be able to pay, I think, this month's rent, but not the month's rent after that, and then he's out on the street.
I have to say, you know, that book changed my life. The Illuminatus trilogy, to me, was in college, was one of the best books I've ever read. It was so bizarre. And, you know, it's a perfect college book because it's got all, you know, hippy-dippy sex and political this. And, you know, I freaking love that. So I'm not encouraging our listeners to go out and, you know, help this guy out. But I think, you know, there's also another guy who set up a t-shirt
fund and also a PayPal fund.
Right. So you can, if you don't want to just directly hand money over to somebody you don't really know or something, and I totally understand that, there's a guy who's giving 2/3 of the price of a t-shirt. It's $15 for a t-shirt. He's giving 10 of it to the fund. So if you want at least a t-shirt, you can go buy that.
Yep.
If you really like the guy, I would maybe just at least go and read the article.
Send him $5.
But, you know, if it was Doug on dig.com, I think it's been on Boing Boing and a couple other places.
Yes, it's on Boing right now.
I'm hoping that at the millions of people who visit, if they all just, you know, if someone just pitches in a buck.
Toss him $1, for God's sake.
I mean, if a million people do
it. You know what?
if you got it, drop more. Drop 20. You know?
I'm not suggesting our viewers go and give money to anybody per se. You know what? But again, I think I'm going to go do that.
I probably will too. I mean, I love his work.
But we don't want to lose our non-taxable status.
I just don't want to encourage people.
I think that only happens if I say on the air, like, go give money to the Democratic National Party. Go give money to the Democratic National Party. Go
give that money we're not collecting any money.
We're being taxed anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that was kind of sad, but, you know, what can you do?
Okay, I'll stop.
Snored.
Air scratch.
Snored.
Snored.
Next.
How about you, Peter?
All right. I have a news story here about a huge magnetic ring which will fling satellites into orbit.
Is it called Halo?
Yeah.
Is it
Halo? Didn't fling satellites into orbit. Halo was in orbit.
Right.
So wait, it's a ring like Green Lantern's ring?
No, it's a ring like several miles long. You know,
Halo.
Several kilometers wide.
Like a particle accelerator?
It works like a particle accelerator.
Aha,
it's
Don's
magnetic
on the page.
And it throws things up into orbit. It's a way of doing it without using rocket fuel. The problem with it, they think they're going to be able to make it work. The problem with it is that it throws things so quickly that a lot of types of satellites and things like that would get
disintegrated.
People are probably not going to be sent up this way.
Actually, there's a thing on Boing Boing where they have you remember those old water rockets that people used to launch? You'd fill them up with water, you'd pump them, and you launch them. They have rockets like that this guy is using electromagnetic lift to launch. And you can watch him launch those rockets using a miniature version of what you're talking about.
But that makes sense. I mean, you could send raw supplies up there.
Yeah.
Raw.
That is exactly what they say. They say that if the ring launched hundreds of satellites a year, it would be cheaper than conventional rocket launches.
Mm-hmm.
With 300 launches per year, the team estimates that the ring could put payloads into orbit for $745 per kilogram. If they reach 3,000 launches per year, they calculate they would drop to 189 per kilogram.
Wow.
The cost today, it costs more than 100 times that to send payloads into space.
Wow. Hmm. This is the railgun technology that we invented when we were trying to do Star Wars.
So. Now, does like the International Space Station need like some type of big catcher's mitt up there?
it doesn't rotates. Talk about that. And it also says that there might be some problems keeping it on track, you know, like sending it straight
because you can't be precise
it's harder to control
through air and...
Well, because when you don't have a rocket attached to it to redirect as you're moving up, you know, it hits a hit, you know, wind will move it, you know, turbulence, things like that.
Is this the first stage of getting the what is it, the space elevator that we've always wanted?
Well, that you just send a rock up and then drop a line down.
Right. Well, couldn't you launch one up and then once it's in orbit, you've gotten the top of the elevator?
Yeah, I don't know.
Am I incorrect? I believe the space elevator was supposed to actually use a wire.
Yeah, right.
That's what I'm saying. You launch the tip of the wire up and then the wire's in place in orbit.
Yeah. Now, this would be entirely different than a space elevator because it's...
This is like a giant slingshot.
Right.
Yeah. So...
Though this could be the first step towards...
That's what I'm saying. This could be step to launching...
So could a rocket.
They're entirely different technologies.
Yeah.
No, but one of the problems with building a space elevator is getting the top part up there.
Yeah.
The amount of resources it would take to get the top part up there to begin with.
Well,
fling the cord as a mass up into the up
like
outer
throwing
atmosphere.
A grappling hook.
It's like a grapple hook the moon or something.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yes, but...
You might as well send a rocket ship.
What they're saying is the amount of fuel it would take to get all of the components necessary for an elevator up there
is
one of the most daunting aspects of it.
Now that makes sense.
Okay. There you go.
Okay.
I wasn't explaining it right.
Thank you,
Don.
So, but one of the things about
the fact that we don't have a polymer strong enough for the cord yet.
Yeah, nowhere near strong enough. So, but this is a good
mutant
way to
spiders.
Be able to send... What?
Mutant spiders.
Mutant spiders. There we go. This is a good way to send things like food, you know, raw supplies... You know, it's a really good way to do stuff like that. And it's kind of a neat idea.
Nashed food again?
Exactly.
Well, you know, they say one of the things about it is that one of the reasons that we don't have a bigger space program is the cost of getting those types of things up there. So while this doesn't make a whole lot of sense necessarily financially now, if we were able to do it, it might allow everything to expand. So it's kind of a neat idea.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Excellent.
Okay, this is a follow-up on an old article that Matt gave us several weeks ago.
Thank you, Aaron.
If you remember, Matt, you gave us a you told us about a wine tasting robot.
Oh, right.
You would feed the wine to the robot,
right.
And then the robot would tell you how it tastes.
Right.
It would break it down. So they decided to feed the robot human flesh to see what it said it tastes like. And apparently, we taste like bacon.
See, that's really funny.
Prosciutto,
to me.
Actually.
Prosciutto? That's funny.
That's what it thought we were.
That's really funny because pirates used to refer. Pirates used to refer to human beings because they would get lost on deserted islands and stuff like that. So the slang for somebody who was doomed was long pork. So that's what or long pig. That's what we were known as. So
interesting.
It's interesting that it actually knew we tasted like bacon. So wait, now we have a robot because we've had our robot series. We have ones that ballroom dance, run on blood, right?
And now eat humans.
Eat humans. What else we got going, Don?
It was just the most foolish thing I can imagine to feed a human flesh to the robot. Now it has tasted us. Now it has the taste.
Yes. Now it's like,
once you feed a robot, you know, the taste of human flesh, it's not going back to wine.
Yeah, exactly.
I can tell you right there.
Bacon's good.
I know.
Yeah.
3 weeks later, like, where's that inventor?
Right. Hey, rats may taste like pumpkin pie, but...
Scared the hell out of me, so that's my news.
That's really bizarre. Where'd they get the human flesh?
I think it scans us. I think it because if you remember in the article, it scans us with an infrared laser.
Yeah, but they probably had to cook it to get that
that bacony flavor.
I don't know.
I wonder how they baked it or cooked it.
I don't know. I don't think it's important. All right, Don.
All right. Well, I wanted to, since we're discussing, you know, it was a year and a half ago, we brought up Battlestar Galactica as being the next hot show, and Aaron agrees we were right. So now, what are the next generations of good shows coming out? I've been watching a lot of premieres lately, and honestly, I have not been very impressed by most of them.
What do you think about The Nine?
Was not moved.
Okay.
I didn't see that.
I wasn't even interested in seeing that one.
Heroes?
Yeah. Well, Heroes is one of the two that I wanted to discuss tonight.
Okay.
Now, it's interesting. I talked to someone who read the pilot. See, do you mind if I jump in on this?
Go ahead.
I didn't like Heroes at all.
Okay.
I didn't like the first episode.
I love the idea of it, but I thought it was so clumsily put together.
Let me put something out to you first, though.
Yeah.
How many episodes have you seen?
One.
Okay.
I saw the second one.
All right. Go on. Sorry.
But someone told me that the pilot that was originally written was fantastic for it, that they butchered.
We hear that every freaking day. I mean, that's all I hear in Hollywood.
You backed that up yesterday.
I heard it from
the pilot was split into two parts.
Yeah, I heard that from you, I believe.
No.
That the pilot was supposed to be 2 hours and they wouldn't let him do it, so they split it?
Nope, that was from someone else.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that. That's neat.
Well, my observation was, at the end of last week, we kind of half-heartedly talked about Heroes. Yeah. And what I had seen at that point, I was, shall we say, significantly less than impressed.
Mm-hmm.
I was very much sitting in your corner of things.
Mm-hmm.
After yesterday, though, I am very intrigued to see what happens next week.
Okay.
They pulled their fat out of the fire. And it was yesterday, the second episode was everything I wanted from the first.
Great.
You know, the storylines that really grated on me in the first one were palatable. The ones that were sort of palatable in the first one were actually kind of tasty. I was getting curious as to what was going to happen.
Did they taste like bacon?
Don's getting hungry.
You know, here's my feeling.
He's gnashing his metal teeth.
I've just had salsa tonight.
Here's my feeling about what I saw in the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
I now think I feel a little sorry for the writers. First of all, the dialogue has never been great on it, okay?
No.
And I put that all in the writers.
It's true.
But there are some intriguing storylines. But the art direction, the directors, the people who are creating the episode, to me, it's just trash. You've taken something that has so much potential to be creepy, weird, and extremely mysterious in every single way, and it's like bubblegum television making. Like the dad who's supposed to be the evil. I mean,
that's what I refer to as being
idiotic.
The now palatable storyline.
But that could be an awesome storyline, and he's going to be our main bad guy.
I think
he's an idiot.
No, but I think I'm curious to see what will happen with him because right now he's basically the mustache twirling villain in
literally
right now.
Yeah. He's got the evil. It's just absurd how obvious he is. Even if they turn it around and change it up, and he's really a good guy, it's like, you know, please, I'm not.
But you know what? I'm willing to go along and wait to find out. One, is he the villain like they're setting it up to be, or is this a distraction? Is this a decoy?
The other thing is we have some really creepy, horrible deaths in the second.
Good.
Yeah, okay, that is not creepy at all.
No,
I mean, these things are like really bizarre and really messed up, and the way they shot it and the way it's handled with the music and all that. Although I do like some of the music in this television series, it's not creepy at all.
Now, I'm going in a different direction with you. Rather than saying it should have been lost, it should have been creepy.
No, I'm saying it should be frightening and horrific.
I'm not agreeing with you. I'm not accepting your premise. What I'm saying is they went ahead and they're trying to make – they're presenting it as matter-factual instead. They could have gone a creepy direction, and I probably would have preferred it, and I would have clicked much more wholeheartedly than I am now.
I always like it when things are matter of fact instead of like having sort of a big slant to it that's kind of creative and unusual.
Oh, by the way,
you're sort
this
of
guy,
twisting what I'm saying.
This
here.
Guy has oh, been.
Sorry, what?
Has,
am I?
Are you being ironic, Peter?
I'm not being anything.
So when you walk into a scene and there's a man dead with his skull cut straight in half, his brain been completely removed and frozen solid, you're going to treat that as matter of fact?
Yes.
I'm
Come
sorry.
On, Aaron.
That happens. It doesn't work in any situation.
At 9 p.m., probably. That's more graphic than they could present on most shows.
Okay. You know? Well, you
showed
on
CSI. The other example that I'm going to throw out is on the opposite side of the room from the man you're describing, there's a woman nailed to a banister by 1,000 tiny little pieces of metal, right?
Again, could have been creepy.
Could have been creepy, but it's the middle of a crime scene. Like, it's they don't really have the chance for a reveal like that. What I saw was someone
Seven
walk in.
Is a crime scene. Seven scared the living snot out of me.
Yeah, which I don't think would be a good idea for a 9 o'clock show where they're going for the PG-13 audience.
Yeah, well, then that's not my show.
Yeah, but
if it's going to be Disneyland,
they're presenting it in a different way.
X-Files managed to pull it off, and they were still a PG audience.
Even more than that, CSI pulled it off, and CSI goes inside wounds. Tearing...
I've never been creeped up by CSI.
Yeah.
Not even
Although
slightly.
CSI is creepier than this,
yes.
But I'm still – I think CSI can go creepier.
Well, I do not know the show worth a damn, but the show looks like they're trying to do Action Comics superheroes.
In this one – okay, I think we can agree the show is supposed to be a comic book in a lot of ways.
It is a comic book, actually.
And now, what I'm saying is that –
that's why I watched it because I didn't think it was going to be a comic – I thought it was about normal people getting superpowers. That's what I thought the premise was. Now it's like –
that still can be a comic book. There are lots of comic books about people getting superpowers. So what I'm saying is rather than doing the shades of gray, this is not a Vertigo comic book we're looking at. Mm-hmm. It has bright colors.
Yeah.
This is a comic book in bright colors.
Yeah, it looks like Action Comics.
Yeah. I was more intrigued. I thought the second episode was way better than the first.
So much better.
And I'm going to watch the third episode, but I have to tell you, I think they're really screwing the pooch. And the writers need to rally together and say they need support because I think that they've actually got something going and they need someone to help them out. Fire their art director. Fire the directors you've been using and get some real filmmakers in there.
Some of the things
Aaron
I think
Hendricks.
You're not liking.
I am available.
And also, some of the writing I suspect – you know, and you don't like it when I say this. I think I think the show is a victim of groupthink. A lot of the dialogue is so simplistic that it doesn't seem to be any one person's writing. It's like a bunch of people have just picked away any personality from it.
I'm sure that's part of it, but I also think some of it's the studio, the station. You know, trying.
I include that in groupthink. When the producers get in there and start mucking with the writers, it's part of it.
Or the heads of the studio saying...
But it's more dialogue.
You know, we need to make this accessible. We need to make this... you know, why... Like, in the first episode, one of my biggest problems was we have all these random connections between these people where clearly what they're trying to do is they're trying to say these people are somehow going to come together and give you that information, right? Mm-hmm. And they're doing it in the most god-awful way. They're doing it in the God is making these people come together way, which is the wrong way to do it. You don't need to. You've got this guy whose dad figured out who they all are, knows who they all are, and he's the one that's the Professor Xavier. He gets them together. That's all you need.
Yep.
It's not. You don't need this awkward bullshit way of getting people together. And I just stole your catchphrase. Bullshit!
Well, the problem is they also tell. They have to explain it to you in dialogue. That's the other, you know, awkward thing. It's you have this, you know, this dialogue where they're telling
I'm waiting to
you
see what'll happen once they get the exposition out of the way.
Did you notice how torturous it was, the connections from one person to the next person to the next person?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why the first episode was awful. Yeah.
Awful.
The second episode, they didn't even try to make those connections.
Thank you.
You know?
Yeah, the second episode was better.
So, all right, so
I really felt like maybe if the first and second episodes had been spliced together, it wouldn't have been as good as the second episode. Like, honestly, I think the second episode could have just started. Like, we didn't need episode one.
No.
You know, episode one could have just been flushed down the toilet, and episode two, as a starting point, would have been adequate.
Right, because you don't need to explain things, people. You've got five seasons, hopefully, to explain it.
Yeah.
All you have to do is intrigue us. There was only one intriguing thing in the first episode, was that the guy painting a nuclear explosion. And they did one really intriguing...
Oh, go give it away, Aaron.
Hey, you know, it's been two episodes. And they did one intriguing thing, I thought, in the second episode.
I liked the ending of the second episode.
Where the guy...
We won't talk about 17 yet.
Yep.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot.
Yeah, so did I.
And I thought it was a nice twist, because honestly, I was not impressed by that character or that storyline up to that
but
point.
But the problem is it puts a timer on
I don't think that's a problem.
Okay.
I don't think that's a problem. I think that's a good thing, because it needed something that is something coming.
Yeah.
Now we know something is coming.
Yeah.
We have pressure on.
Right, right. Okay.
Moving on. Or not.
Oh,
sorry?
You don't have any more, Aaron? You're done?
Oh, yes, I do.
We're going in this direction now.
Oh, we are. Oh.
There we go. The next one is there's a hacker convention in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what they've been doing is meeting up and discussing all of the stuff that's going to be going on in the hacker community over the next year. Now, what was interesting about this convention, what the overweening thing that people basically say came out of it, was that the hackers were not necessarily interested in just bringing down systems. They were talking about huge vulnerabilities in operating systems, i.e. Vista, that's coming along, that's going to make their lives harder because everything's just going to be crazy. They talk about how it could bring down the internet and a lot of other things.
How Vista can bring down the internet?
Well, their presentations about weaknesses in Vista, Microsoft's new operating system due out early next year, blue pill attacks that can create a virtual computer within your own without you knowing anything about it. There are talks on the use of technology to track our every move and record our every written or even spoken thought, and there are lectures about technical issues so dense just reading their titles makes my brain ache. However, if there's a discernible thread running through many of this year's presentation in Kuala Lumpur, it's the vulnerability of communication, software, and technology. Basically, they're saying that generally we are incredibly vulnerable, and not just a hacking attack, but just the software in general is vulnerable and needs to be strengthened.
Well, first of all, we'll all be lucky if Vista actually comes out early next year.
Right.
So at this rate, we'll be safe for all time because they'll just keep pushing it.
Have you guys seen what Vista looks like and how similar it is to the Mac operating
system? Oh, my God.
It's bizarre.
It's amazing how those Mac people just pillage the Microsoft stuff.
Yeah, I know. And they do it
they should
like
be ashamed.
2 years before. It's unusual.
Well, that's hard because freaking Vista's been in freaking creation since 1988 at this rate.
How long has Vista been going on?
Well, I mean, no one knows, I'm sure, since they start from scratch. But
right. Basically, the hackers are warning that telecom companies, internet companies, and stuff like that only do the base minimum to cover their asses at any one point in time and then issue patches. And that if they really want to stay on the forward edge of what's going to be coming over the next 5 to 6 years, they've got to get ahead, and they've got to get ahead now.
Yeah, put up a firewall. Make sure your firewall isn't login, admin, and what is it? 0000 for your password, please. Come on, people.
Or 1, 2, 3, 4.
I think
five,
I gotta go check my firewall.
What were the most common ones? It was God,
sex.
Sex?
Open Sesame, really? Password. 6969. I mean, there's a list. There's like the top 100 passwords. It's amazing. You know, abracadabra. Open says me. All that. You know, password.
So I brought in two articles that are kind of linked here. Both have to do with cell phones. A UK firm is hoping to develop a cell phone security system that will have your phone start to scream if someone steals it. If you realize
how about just ring?
If you realize, well, it doesn't necessarily scream. You know,
who his phone gets stolen? Well, you can't even use it anyway.
Apparently, this happens all the time, and I don't understand why.
True.
I really do not understand why it would even be possible to steal a cell phone, because I know that when I change phones, I have to call in and give them ID numbers and information off my cell phone, you know, the barcode information. You'd think if a cell phone was stolen and you report it to, like, Sprint, they'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, they turn it off right, like, within seconds. Right.
But anyway, they say that that somehow it's possible. So what this would do is if your cell phone's stolen, you call in and all of a sudden the cell phone starts emitting a high-pitched screech, which will not shut off unless they remove the battery. It erases all the data on your cell phone in case you've got, like, you know, Steven Spielberg's phone number on it.
Paris Hilton's
personal videos. And it locks the permanently locks the handset. So it's kind of – it's got some at least advantages.
It's like a self-destruct.
Yeah, it's like a self – it doesn't – it's more self-destruct than find the guy.
And
I just want to brand someone a thief. That would be great. Yeah. Like, you took my cell phone, now your mom knows you took it.
I'm a thief.
Like, this cell phone is stolen. Like, if this burns, cell phone is stolen.
It burns an A into their hand.
Oh, that would rock.
I just want one that makes the cell phone, hot. You know, get really hot and start fires and explode.
I was actually thinking, like, I would love it if the cell phone could just eject all the remaining power in its battery into the thigh of the person.
Maybe Sony will make one, and they can just use their batteries.
The electroshock.
Yeah. Exterminate. Exterminate.
They can use their exploding batteries.
Exterminate.
So the other one's kind of a neat idea. It's a Bluetooth watch that when your phone rings somewhere, like a lot, it's always in your pocket, it's somewhere, you look at your phone and it tells you who's calling.
Dick Tracy, here we come.
And what you can do is you can just, if you don't want to answer the phone, you hit a button and it turns off your cell phone wherever it is.
That's cool.
And it's kind of a neat idea. I probably won't catch on, but I think it's super cool.
Yeah. They just need to make the watch the cell phone. I mean, I know there was one made. The thing was like this, you know, 3 inches wide, but
eventually, yeah, that's a good idea.
I like the cyberpunk one where they implant your phone underneath your skin like a tattoo.
Like, and it glows.
And it glows.
Yeah. I don't want it.
Yeah, I don't want it either.
And then you talk like this.
Yeah.
Well, no, they have the ring.
Oh, yeah.
They have the two rings, the thumb ring and the Bluetooth thumb ring and the pinky ring, and you hold your hand like, you know, like you're doing the fake phone call with your finger, your thumb in your ear, and you can they're trying to make that cell phone.
No.
That's kind
of
cool.
So you just go,
"No, it's not. It's not cool at all."
No, it's not cool.
I think
it would be kind of cool if, like, you had to dial by, like, making mystic signals.
I think my hand would get tired though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, your hand doesn't get tired when you're holding a phone.
All right, my
you can't really hold your
hand
underneath.
Yeah, but every time I gesture to say "surf's up," like I call my mom, that would suck.
You can't, however, hold your hand underneath your neck so that you can do the dishes or some other activity,
right?
While you're doing holding the phone.
All right, my last news story is a link. The entire Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time is now online. You can read the whole thing, the whole book.
Really?
Yep, chapter by chapter, it's all there. So we'll put a link on our website.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
does it have pictures?
It has some pictures, yeah. So anyway, I thought that was
pretty
cool.
Naked Stephen Hawking. Ooh la la.
Can you get your computer to read the book so it sounds like Stephen Hawking is reading the book?
Actually,
there's a lecture with Stephen Hawking where it's his voice. It's that computer talking for him. I wonder if they'll put that up soon, too.
A Brief History of Time.
That's exactly what it sounds like, you know.
I kind of heard a rumor that Stephen Hawking was doing the voiceover for the Daleks on the new Doctor Who.
Oh, please. Come on. All right. Do you have any other news stories?
No, the only other TV show premiere that has moved me in any way, shape, or form has been Studio 60.
Yeah. Freaking amazing.
Really?
Yes. It's spot on. But here's the caveat. All right. If you liked West Wing, give it a shot. If you hated West Wing, turn the channel.
It is exactly West Wing in a different set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like the
exact
same
show. Right to the point where
they're
walking between locations, panning through the hallways.
There's nothing different. You know? The actors are the same.
Really funny.
They had the most phenomenal shot in that movie last week. I was really impressed by the filmmaking in it. I was like, wow, that's a great shot. That would be a great shot in a movie, and this is TV I'm watching.
I'm pretty sure it's the same people who made West Wing outside of the writers, too.
It's the whole team.
The lighting is the same.
Is it Aaron Sorkin?
It is Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin did?
Yes.
Oh, and Tommy Schlamme.
But also, if you've never watched West Wing and you've never watched Studio 60, here's – other geeks in the room may throw things at me for this. If you liked Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Joss Whedon's writing, I also recommend checking this out.
I have
the writing.
Give me something to throw at him too. There's no there. Despite I'm telling you, there is no relation at all to what he's saying and Buffy. So
if you analyze the dialogue style, they're very similar. The only difference being that Aaron Sorkin's writing style
we are now
is
all
a
throwing
little
things
bit more
Don.
Frantic. It's a little bit more just like dialogue just keeps coming at you and never stops. No one ever takes a breath.
Did you ever see the Saturday Night Live where they made fun of his writing? Where basically they start talking and it's Clinton in the front and they're all talking on the run and they're starting to, and they start speeding up until eventually they're just jogging in a big circle and then they start full run and they're still doing the dialogue to mm-hmm. each other as fast as possible.
It's the same thing. Now, if you're saying that you have this kind of snarky clockwork thing going on. Yes. It's not realistic dialogue. It's
snarky
like,
clockwork.
There's a certain flow and rhythm to the dialogue. It's
yeah.
patter speak.
It's
patter speak. It's snappy patter.
Yeah. The only way somebody's line works is because the line before that is perfectly constructed to get it to work. So it's kind of like clockwork. The right. scene, it's not, no one talks that way, but it just, it's like a puzzle piece.
Right. And those
which
of
is
you
great.
Who watched Buffy know exactly what Aaron is talking about and he's supporting my argument.
Okay, whatever. That's nothing like Buffy. All right. Can we move on? Are we...
I saw another thing that was interesting. Ugly Betty. Anyone heard of this?
Yes.
I saw... Actually, I stand corrected. That looked interesting to me.
Auditioned for it. Really good show.
I actually... Okay. I liked it a lot when it was The Devil Wears Prada. Okay.
Ooh.
And I like it a lot now. I think this actually came out before The Devil Wears Prada.
Yes, it did.
So it's not a ripoff. It's definitely not a ripoff, but it is a very similar storyline, and I like it for all the reasons I like that movie. And
I actually prefer it to Devil Wears Prada.
And it is Selma Hayek producing.
And she's in it.
And she's fine.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll tune in.
She has a small role in it. The woman they cast as the lead is actually – she's a fairly established little actress. She's been doing lots of
– She was in supporting roles. What is it called?
Real Women Have Courage.
Thank you.
She was in Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. You know, she's a girl movie actress so
right.
far.
And she is actually quite good. Quite good.
And she's a solid actress. And, you know, I hate to quite put it in these terms, she's not a classic beauty. You know, and when I watch Devil Wears Prada, I'm supposed to believe that Anne Hathaway is not attractive.
I know.
I was never able to swallow that pill, you know.
But I've got to tell you.
Oh, I'd swallow that pill.
I'd swallow that pill.
there's this fantastic moment in it. And I'm going to be giving it away. It's just a spoiler.
Spoiler on Ugly Betty on Geeks On.
But there's this absolutely hysterical moment where the beginning of the film, they set it up by she's sitting next to this model and she goes, "Oh, you're wearing a poncho. I love that. I have one of those." And the model is just like so snooty because the clothes she's wearing are awful. Just so snooty and like, you know, turned off on her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, later, you know, when she gets this job, she has to come in, and her nephew is saying, "You need to wear something that's stylish." And she goes, "Okay, I think I have something." And you cut to her coming in, and she's wearing her poncho, which says Guadalajara across the center, and it's completely not the same thing and not stylish. And it was so funny; I was rolling. Even though I had heard about it on NPR, I was rolling.
Yeah. I stand corrected. That was a good premiere. I was very impressed by the part of it I saw. I only saw half.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Cool.
Shall we move on to our topic?
Let's move
topic!
On.
Topic!
So.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
What are we talking about?
We are talking about season 2 of Battlestar Galactica.
Dun, dun, dun.
Best show on television.
Says Aaron Hendricks.
Something I just thought was very interesting was Slate.com. Okay.
Slate
is a popular news, news and editorial website.
Mm-hmm. News-ish.
That is, it's not a geek website.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Named Battlestar Galactica its top drama of the year.
Cool. Well,
so did Time Magazine.
That's right. I forgot.
So, yeah.
So, breaking out of the, the back room, Battlestar Galactica is busting into the mainstream.
That's right.
Now, if only sci-fi could get 8 other shows just like it, we'd be fine.
Exactly. Well, Caprica in development.
Right.
The spinoff series, which sounds like a terrible idea. But anyway.
Mansquito 2.
So, yeah. Before...
I have to say, one of the things, I mean, just because you're saying this... I mean, one of the things that seems to me the reason it is so good is because it was so small. the studios didn't care about it. They didn't micromanage it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it let them do things that are so risky.
Well, I wouldn't say that's the reason, because that's not a small show for Sci-Fi Channel.
Thanks to one of our listeners, though, we managed to go to a panel discussion last year.
Yes.
With the cast and the creators of Battlestar Galactica. And one of the things that they said was Sci-Fi Channel was not that hot on the concept of Battlestar Galactica and kind of picked it up reluctantly. So they didn't expect it to go anywhere, so that's probably why they didn't muck with it.
I believe this is what happened. They were approached with Battlestar Galactica, the series, and Sci-Fi Channel, it wasn't like, they'll air freaking anything. So it wasn't like, no, that's a bad idea, we don't want to air it. They said, how much is it going to cost us? They gave them the number, and the Sci-Fi Channel said, are you kidding me? We're the Sci-Fi Channel. We can't produce a show like that.
Mm-hmm.
So then the creators went to the BBC, and they went to them and said, hey, how would you like doing the Battlestar Galactica for half the price if we can find another half? And they said, great. Then they went back to Sci-Fi Channel and said, hey, how about that show that you liked the idea of, it was too expensive, you only pay for half of it, but you share it with the BBC. They said, great. So I think that part of the reason why they can't touch it as heavily is because it's by ownership.
That's brilliant.
What a great way to protect your show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know they get in show notes from both.
Yeah.
I know they do. But every time I hear the podcasts, they've always been Ron Moore has said that he constantly gets good comments from the people above him, which he says he's not used to.
What I liked when I heard the podcast was that he specifically said he was asking science fiction questions, and he was referring to Harlan Ellison, he was referring to Asimov, and he was saying that this is a show about extreme circumstances, you know, and basically science fiction gives him the forum to vent those extreme circumstances and ask the difficult questions, which is what I think good sci-fi is all about, and that's what I love about the show so much, in which it looks like they've expanded into in season two.
And in fact,
which you just watched in 10 minutes.
I watched the end of in 10 minutes, yes.
In fact, for those of us who've been watching the webisode, I guess you would call it.
Yeah.
I mean, it does clue into some really interesting ethical issues. If you're living in a police state and you're being policed by machines, is it ethical for you to become a cop underneath them in order to sort of shelter you so you're not directly underneath the machines, so you're at least under your own control on some level,
right? Well, you're a buffer.
What is the thin line between being a buffer and it being a heroic act and being a sellout and being a traitorous act?
That's exactly like the Jews who would police the other Jews in Nazi Europe.
Exactly. They in their minds, and it may be true.
I haven't seen that. That's a brilliant concept.
But let's, instead of jumping to the end, let's kind of start from the beginning of the series, of this season.
The second season.
And talk about some of the issues they brought up and how we think it might affect the future of the series and this next season. So we start out with...
By the way, for those of you who haven't seen season two, suck it up. You had a year.
Yeah, this is spoiler. I mean, there will be a spoiler alert at the beginning of this episode, but guess what? We're going to be talking about this as if you have seen the second season. So if you have not seen it and you don't want to have anything ruined,
skip it.
Leave now. So we started out with our grand cap or captain shot.
Getting shot.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And
which was so funny because I was watching this with Kat. Right? Now, Kat, as you know, my fiance is not a big geek.
You think?
Not a big geek. But...
Though she'd drop you for Crichton in a heartbeat.
Yeah. But she reacted so strongly to Adama being shot. It was hilarious. We're watching the show. He gets shot. And she goes, no! I just about fell out.
My wife is really into this series, too. So he is dying. Okay? And then here's the...
Now that you mention it, every woman I know that's turned it on has gotten addicted to it.
Yep.
Great show.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, they've also got one of the best female heroines of all time. They've got very strong female heroines in all levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, come on. Most shows
It's because they're goddesses. And I don't mean by pretty. I mean because they're literally goddesses, because they're playing goddesses, or the archetype of goddesses, I think, in many ways.
I do understand that. But the
Artemis, Aphrodite.
You're talking about the lead characters?
Yeah.
Well, he's talking about the Cylons.
We're talking about the Cylons.
But
I agree with you on that.
Lead Cylons. But,
We'll talk about that theory later on. We'll come back to it.
But yeah, no, they are extraordinarily well written. You know, they're love stories that are really well fleshed out. I mean,
there are what you were getting to, I think, was there are no weak female characters in this one.
Yeah. Well, that's
whereas
Peter's
if you go back and you look at the original Battlestar Galactica, the women were jokes.
There were no.
I mean, they were really.
They
jokes.
Were really jokes. They were actually.
There was an episode
jokes.
Where they become Viper pilots, and like they're.
They can't do
They
shit.
Can't do crap. They're completely beyond incompetent.
Right. They were like Pink Fives. They're like, of...
They made Pink Five look like a professional mercenary.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay, so one thing I want to bring up, and I think this is definitely going to continue on, is Colonel Ty now is in charge. And we see the type of person he is. What he really is when he has to really command in stress levels.
And we see his wife, who's frickin' Lady M.
Oh, I love the
I
wife.
Know you
I
love
hate her so much.
I know
I
you
love her.
Love her. I think she's over. I hate that character.
Yeah, I think she's overdone, but it kind of belongs in another series to me.
No, she's Macbeth. She is totally Macbeth.
Ooh, you said it. Hot potato on the shore.
We're not in the theater. It's okay.
We're in film, Don. Anywhere, theoretically, could be backstage.
We're in radio.
Okay, well now, so this is backstage. Anyway,
all right, let's move on. one thing is that Colonel Ty sets up a police state right away.
Right.
Which I think is interesting, especially now knowing where we are now in the series, that he was very quick and willing to set up a police state, which keeps coming up in the series. And I think the reason why I've enjoyed season two... is because exploring the idea of who is in charge of the human race or the Caprica race, we have a president who has been elected or supposedly been elected, okay? They are supposed to be in charge, the ultimate leader. But we...
Who's got the guns.
But yeah, exactly. As everyone knows in the world, the person who owns the armies is the true leader. And... it happens all over the world, and I think it's exposed in a situation where there's only 40,000 people. It becomes very, very prominent. And I think this is the perfect example of where Adama has let the president be the leader when he feels it.
Well, that was a great thing in season one where they had that thing where they said, do you stand for this or are you creating a military dictatorship? Mm-hmm. Are you literally going to redo the human race, in which case we'll need to start having babies? And that was a really neat thing where she established her rule at the point of a pen, which was really, really wonderful.
But then the person who allows her to do that gets shot.
Right.
His replacement stops that dead.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I believe this is where she now gets captured, right?
Right.
We get to the point where we're having a civil war within the human race.
Mm-hmm.
And
she's being moved from ship to ship.
Well, at that point, if I recall correctly, it was Adama who had given the instructions to bring her into custody.
Oh, that's true.
Yes.
That's true.
Adama had already given the order.
Right.
And she had made a stand on her own ship.
That's right.
And... it was questionable if allowing herself to be captured was ultimately her plan.
Right.
But that's she saw a point where it's like, either I allow people to start firing and people die, or I allow myself to be arrested.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I like, and now I get what you're saying, and I'm completely on board with you, but my impression of the series is a little bit different. Yes, he was able to put the clamps down. He was able to rule at the end of a gun, right? But things weren't holding. Things were he couldn't hold everything together at the point of a gun.
Right.
Everything started spiraling off. And as soon as the president was brought back into the storyline, that's when the fleet came back together.
True. But remember, the same thing started happening to her toward the end of the series.
Very true.
But things start falling apart under her type of rule.
Well, she has cancer. She starts hallucinating. She has, and this is a wonderful show. I love because there are always multiple realities going on, and you can never really know what any one reality is. What is Baltar really seeing? You know, is he seeing a projection?
I love that question.
Is it something in his head? What is it? What? And then they added it. They said, what is the president really seeing? You know, is she seeing the drug? Is she seeing visions, her oracular behavior? Right. What is real? And that was one of the wonderful things, because then the characters that don't hallucinate become so much more solid. And you're like, okay, well, we're with Adama right now,
yeah.
And Adama sees things as they really are, and you want him to come in and then be that clarifying glass of water.
Right. You know? Okay, so this is also now where we have a Cylon baby. This is where Boomer has a baby, okay?
Right.
Did not love the actual birth episode.
So now wait, what the arc of Boomer's character is, she dies after being, you know, she basically gets assassinated, like, you know.
Which Boomer are you talking about? Because there are two major Boomers.
Right, there was Boomer who was on the planet.
Yep, and Boomer that was with the fleet.
And Boomer who was with the fleet.
Boomer with the fleet is found out as a Cylon.
Killed.
Right.
Okay? And her storyline ends up going back to Caprica.
Right.
Where she wakes up and she's with the Cylons.
Right.
Okay? The planet side one is the one that gets pregnant on the planet side.
With Hilo.
And gets brought back to the fleet.
Right.
So they swap places.
Right. Okay.
Now, I didn't think that was a great episode either, but this brings up a point to me where now the ship decides whether they're going to kill off... They need to make a decision whether they're going to kill off this baby or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the baby also has this ability to save the president.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some special juju
in his blood. It's stem cells.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So what did you feel about that moral dilemma? I know that you still have the toaster. They're just toasters. But are you sure that after seeing...
Well, that one's half human. Like, as far as I'm concerned, it was a human clone gestated inside of a toaster. You know? There's okay. some... Well, possibly some genetic material
with
the toaster, but...
This is the beauty of how they've set it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are the people who look at the Cylons as somewhat human because they have feelings, okay? Mm-hmm. And then there are the people who don't look at the Cylons as human and think of them as toasters. And now you've created something that is half of each.
A hybrid.
Which really forces both sides to kind of go, now, what's going on here?
Right. You know? Now... In a future episode, The Farm, I don't know if you remember that, when Starbuck mm-hmm. gets captured and put in the hospital.
Right.
Where okay. they're using human women to gestate.
Okay. Now, yes. If that is indeed the case, if a robot decides to use genetics to create a new being.
Are we going back to this argument?
Well, yeah, kind of. Do you think that changes, because of that episode, do you think that changes things as far as... Of your guys' feelings about whether they are machines or not?
The offspring is probably human. It's got human components to it, if not the majority or entirety of it.
What I questioned in that episode is whether or not the offspring of those women were the Cylons, were the Cylon 12.
Or something completely
12
new.
Or 13 that they were doing, or whether or not they were coming up with something completely new.
I got
new.
The impression that it was more of a research thing. They were trying to do something new.
Okay, then two questions. What do you think about their decision with the baby? And then also related to what we just said, do you think we're going to see a new Starbuck, a new Starbuck Cylon pop up in the next season?
A Starbuck Cylon? Well,
remember, she was stuck in the hospital and they took some stuff from her.
So right.
Technically, no, I don't think you're going to see a Starbuck Cylon at all.
I don't think that would be very satisfying.
I think that would be jumping the shark.
No, I don't think because they took her eggs that her eggs are automatically going to be...
Her.
That's not, I mean, look, you know, if you want to clone someone, you don't need their eggs to clone them. You need their DNA.
I think you'll probably end up seeing a Starbuck offspring sometime in the future. Probably not this season. It would be too quick. But, yeah, I mean, they have the eggs.
They're doing something with the damn things, and it's got to show up again sometime.
Yeah, I think that's going to be great. I'm very excited to see that.
And then what do you think about, so they have this half Cylon, half human baby.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of killing it, they decide to whisk it away, tell Boomer that they killed it, and then give it to another woman who thinks she's received a human baby. They
who
have
is
not
also
told her.
Smoking hot.
Yeah, she's pretty. She's a cutie. What do you guys
think? I think it's a great decision.
Smoking.
You think it's okay to give a mother
an
enemy child that's half robotic and not tell her?
Well, maybe not tell
her. As long as you cut it in half.
Okay. Maybe not maybe the part about not telling her, I'm not sure I would agree on. But yeah, you absolutely keep something like this alive until you find out that it is dangerous. You know, I mean, you know, you don't destroy something that has a potentiality for danger at that low level of potentiality.
Now remember, this boomer who has delivered this baby mm-hmm. has done nothing but help the human race.
Right. Now here's the question.
And they've now taken her baby and Hilo's baby.
Okay, right.
And tell him that it died.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty awful.
So you're saying it's a good idea or bad idea?
You're asking two different questions here.
No. You asked whether or not it's a good idea to keep it alive. And
I'm asking the whole. Do you think their decision was a good idea?
I think it was both good and bad idea.
You'd be a great leader, Peter.
It's complicated.
That's
because
you got
not a straight answer. No, I'm glad
I elect Peter to make decisions.
The decider. As the president,
okay.
She had no other choice. I think killing the baby, it doesn't make sense. You know, either it's a time bomb, which I wouldn't buy that.
Leaving it with Hilo, who is a trusted human, is also a bad idea.
Who's also in love with the Cylon,
right.
Who you can't trust.
Right.
Okay. And I disagree with you saying she's done nothing but help. Yes, she's done nothing but help.
So far.
But everything she's done could be for two different goals. One, to keep herself or the baby alive.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, to ingratiate herself to the point where she can get back out of the brig and do whatever horrible
or
thing she
three,
needs to do.
Or three, she really is trying to help out the human race.
Yes, that's the other option.
There was the boomer that was on... There was the boomer that was on the ship,
mm-hmm.
and she was constantly trying to help, but she would be reprogrammed every now and then, and the, mm-hmm. the mother programming would take over, and she would do these awful things.
Well,
so we don't know at what point this good boomer
is going to snap. Yeah. Well, that's someone online said, boomer wasn't bad, she was just programmed that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, which is another dilemma.
Which is a beautiful way of putting it, because
I felt sorry for her, really. I mean, I really thought she was truly good. I mean, we mm-hmm. saw her commit suicide because she was so troubled about thoughts, and then it kicked in, and she didn't mean to do it.
Yeah.
And
She was really trying to do things, you know, to be a human being, mm-hmm. and fighting to be a human being and not have this happen.
Right.
And once the programming kicked in, it was like she had no control.
Yeah, it's also very interesting to see the Cylons slide into being human, is that they're having trouble with the functionality of being sort of like genies in bottles, is that, mm-hmm. you know, their essence gets dispersed and they show up in a different place and they're not, you know, they're yet another genie and, you know, but they can't deal with the fact that, you know, like, what's mm-hmm. her 7 of 9 or whatever her name is she's in love with Baltar.
Six.
You
right.
Know,
yeah.
She's desperately in love with Baltar, even though, you know, it's all screwy. And then there's also the alternate one, the Misty one, who we don't know whether or not she exists or is in Baltar's mind.
And then there's the one who's been abused.
Right.
And raped and tortured.
Yeah, there's three major sixes running around.
But right. They're all in love with him, you know.
Well, the one...
Three sixes? What does that mean?
The one who was being raped and tortured didn't know him.
But you could still see there was still a connection of some sort with him. So I think there is.
I think he was just a savior, and she was willing to do anything to get out of that.
Well, maybe. Yeah. I suspect that she
would be
in love
with
him
too. I just want Baltar to get his gigantic glowing throne at some point.
Yeah, and cape.
And cape.
I just want to see him when he's got a chance to be with all three of these women, and they're all in the same room, and how he reacts to the fact that there's three different beautiful but psychotic in different
ways.
Well,
the one chance he had for that, the imaginary one fled. That was something I found was very interesting. The two sixes can't seem to coexist in one space at the same time.
I think that two sixes can coexist. Maybe not.
I'm not saying literally. I'm saying within his framework.
Yeah.
You know? He drove the imaginary one away as soon as the real one was there.
Right. Now that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. So right before the big mid-season finale, we get introduced to Lucy Lawless.
La 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 la.
Who is...
La, 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 la.
Who is a reporter, and we then find out as...
And we get to see everybody naked.
Right. Another
yes.
Cylon.
Yes.
Naked so Cylons. That's another one on the list. This was what? There's 12 of them?
Yes.
So counting
Apollo
down.
Apollo pre-fat suit.
Right. Now, then the Phoenix shows up. Now, right. This is one of my favorite episodes of the whole damn freaking series.
The Phoenix?
Yeah. That's the big
Pegasus.
Other ship.
Pegasus.
I was wondering what you're talking about.
I was thinking Flight of the Phoenix. Flight of the Phoenix is one of the episodes, one of the lame ones. But Pegasus shows up, Okay, we've got Ensign Ro, who commands.
And Ensign Ro, who I did not like.
No, you know, she's a solid little actress, but
no,
she didn't have the power to stand up against Edward. Almost.
Yeah, I mean, we even talked about this. Aaron and I talked about this before. Is that I didn't like her, and it wasn't specifically because she was a woman or anything. It was because of her age.
Yeah,
and we've established gravitas in a lot of these things, and I felt she had no gravitas. No.
Right.
I felt she was whiny.
I think as an actress,
the same thing. She had no power.
Right.
You know?
I think as an actor, she did as good as she could have done with. I mean, they cast her in that. I agree. We were talking about that. If this was a Star Trek episode, I would have been fine with it because we're used to hot young.
We've seen the hotshot captains.
Yeah, hotshot captains.
Yeah, women are so much more competent than men that they can usually achieve admiralship by age 30.
Right. Yes, but in this series, we've learned that, you know, captains are old guys who've worked their way through and their experience and their. You know,
they know what they're doing.
They've earned that.
And they shoved in one line about her being absolutely exceptional, a prodigy who just rocketed through the ranks.
They were trying to make her a Kirk.
Yeah. It was one line, though, and she didn't back it up.
Right.
Yeah. I thought she did pretty good.
But I thought she was snide.
Peter? I think you made a good comment, though, that at least before the show, that someone like a Judi Dench would have been so much more interesting.
Yeah, I would have wanted to see a Judi Dench. If I saw Judi Dench in there, I would have been like, damn,
she's
Adama.
She's the first person I went to think of, too.
Adama's going to get his ass kicked by Judi Dench.
It would have been so interesting to see them across from each other. Oh, my gosh. Because it's kind of when you have an actor of his quality, you know, you need someone across that's
I've got the same balls. Yeah.
Because otherwise, the scenes just fall flat. You don't ever feel afraid that it's going to go a different way.
I totally agree.
And I was there was a point where I was wondering, because the impression I was getting was that all the power she had in the scenes with him was power he was giving her.
Right.
Right. He was deferring to her because of her rank.
That was another.
And I was wondering if that was an intentional choice or not.
But that's there's two things. First of all, I thought there was a little bit of a writing problem. It should have been very clear, and it still should be more clear, that the Pegasus could whip Galactica's ass. They mentioned it in like one line that it's a new model, but it needs to it needs to be bigger. They need to show something to show that she had the guns. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, I thought it was cool that they wrote it in especially when President Roslin said, well, how do you feel about this? And he says, hey, I'm in the military. She's my ranking officer. I've been fine with this since I joined the military. That's the way the military works.
Yeah, right. You don't have feelings about stuff like this.
She is my commander. And that's the way it works. I'm completely fine with chain of command. I thought that was cool the way he knew that he probably had more experience and that he worked some things out better than she did. But he also knows that he's in the military. There's always idiots at the top that make decisions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But also when it came down to him saving people, he decided to jump ranks, which was cool.
Dum, dum, dum.
Like, he's willing to play by the book until it's absolutely absurd, and he goes, wait, I'm taking this back.
Okay, now we have what's very interesting in here is that people behave, and what I think is one of the best things about it, is people behave the most human in extreme circumstances. You know, people are bonded. We're seeing things that we've seen on television. People are bonded together by war. People are doing miraculous things in these very extreme circumstances, etc. But there's also the other side of it where they have real metaphor, where they're basically, and I brought this up before, where we're treating the Cylons, you know, as they're monotheistic, the humans are polytheistic. Mm-hmm. The Cylons are, you know, it could each be treated as an individual god. Six could be Aphrodite.
I think we need to go into explain this theory you're talking about now, because I think at this point people are listening to us wondering what the hell you're talking about.
Okay.
All right, so it's a theory that we've kind of been bandying about for well over a year now.
I'm not quite on board with your theory yet, but I'd like to hear it.
Fair enough. And I think we have different takes on it too.
Okay.
Where there are the humans worship the Olympian gods. Mm-hmm. There are 12 Olympian gods, right? There are more Greek gods, but there are 12 Olympian gods.
Okay.
And there are 12 models of Cylon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my theory has been that the Cylons are each programmed in a way to mirror beliefs about one of the 12 Olympian gods, in that each of them is attacking the human race based on certain aspects of a deity.
Okay.
I disagree with that. I think they are embodying the aspect of it, but not necessarily attacking the humans in that way.
Different sides of things.
Right.
They are attacking humans, it's safe to say, so they would be attacking humans in the way that god would do so.
Right.
So...
But I didn't see Xena doing that. I haven't seen an Ares yet.
I haven't figured out who Xena is.
Right. I haven't seen an Ares commanding the Cylon fleets to directly attack everybody.
But we haven't seen many male characters.
Right.
No.
In fact, the only one that we...
I think we've seen all but two, right? All but two of the Cylons?
No, we're still three short, I think.
We've seen the one that was on the station in the very beginning... Which kind
the
of
white
a Loki.
Guy?
Yeah, the or trickster. I think he's
trickster.
Hermes.
Hermes, then.
And then we've seen...
the guy who was originally on Battlestar Galactica, the PR guy, mm-hmm. who they left behind.
Isn't that the same guy?
It's a different guy.
Oh, okay.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He was the reporter.
He's been nothing but a mouthpiece since then. He just shows up and says a couple lines every once in a while.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know what he is.
Then there's six.
I think he's Hades. Because
okay.
he seems to be more of a thinker. He's sort of.
Well, what about
the
priest? Harry D. Or what is,
I'm not sure about him yet.
The guy from Quantum Leap?
Right.
That's interesting.
And everybody who analyzes the show is going to be a little different. Like Six. Who do you think
so,
Six was?
Aphrodite.
So wait, so you based.
You think Aphrodite?
So you've based this entire theory off of just two people?
We're getting into it.
I think Six is Aphrodite because she's this sort of seduction aspect towards everything. Even when she's being malicious, she's still doing it seductively.
Okay.
Wait, sorry, I get confused. Six is blonde or
Six is
blonde.
The blonde one.
No, she's definitely Hera.
I'm with you. I think Hera.
She's Hera. I mean,
she feels jealousy in everything. Half of her motivations seem to come from jealousy.
The thing is,
Aphrodite was not that jealous.
Hera's the mother of the gods, though. You know, and
yeah.
Oh, Aphrodite was absolutely.
Hera is not the mother of the gods.
No, she's Zeus's wife, and
yes.
therefore, you know, in charge. She's the HMFIC. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Hera is right up there. And if you look at Six is always going up. Six is always asking. Six is never just in charge. Six is always asking of the
Fair
Lucy
enough.
Lawless character and stuff like that.
That's fine, because I'm trying to figure out if she's Aphrodite or Hera.
Oh,
I'm leaning towards Hera right now.
It was. Very clear that she's Hera and Grace Park is Aphrodite.
Now I'm split on Grace Park, the boomer.
Okay. Because everyone is in love with her.
Well, here's my other thinking with boomer. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking she's either Aphrodite because everyone falls in love with her.
I think she's Artemis.
Or Artemis because she found everything.
Yes.
She was the huntress
she's
in
the
first season.
Mm-hmm.
She found everything, and every man who saw her naked, something horrible happened to.
Right.
She's not going to see me naked. All right, so that's two people you've based this on. Now,
okay.
Where's your other...
The other one, now, if it is Xena... Oh, who was the other
I think
one?
Lucy Lawless is Hera.
And that was going to say, I could accept Xena as being Hera, but because, again, she's sowing... Like,
she's sowing discord.
Yeah, she's sowing discord the way Hera was so good
mm-hmm.
at. You know?
What about the black guy who's the doctor?
Is he a Cylon?
He's a Cylon.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's talking to them like a Cylon.
I mean, he was working for the Cylons.
I don't know whether he's a collaborator or whether he's a Cylon.
He was on the planet taking the ovaries from
Starbuck.
Right. Well, he seems more like a Hades.
I thought he was more
he's
Hades.
Very creepy.
That's very possible.
I thought he
was
Hades.
But we're just going with that because he's creepy. We don't know anything about him yet.
No, but mm-hmm. he was you know? He was very. I mean,
he was insidious.
But on the other hand, he's making their plans. He's creating a lot of stuff. He's their maker.
Yeah, but
so
death comes
for
life.
Me, that's Hephaestus.
Well, maybe.
I'm not on board with this quite yet. I'm going to need to see some more data.
Okay.
Before I
well, I also
I don't think Brent Spiner is going to be in the series.
I also thought it. Well, he might. I also thought it was very interesting that the humans sort of did aspects of the Grecian myths, where like the president is very much either a Cassandra or she's very much an Oracle at Delphi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Starbuck and like that. Could
I don't
be
think she's Cassandra because people believe her.
Right.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I buy that.
Who knows?
All right, what's next?
The second season was an expanded season. It's a full, true season.
Right.
And I felt that the second half of the season, they had too many episodic episodes.
Yeah, so I remember that.
Too much like Star Trek?
A little much. Yeah, they decided to add some episodes that didn't fit necessarily into the storyline.
And they felt like filler.
And they felt like filler, and I have to say a lot of them happened in the second half. We had the one where the black market one,
oh, God, that
which
was painful.
Terrible. There was like a terrorist organization.
I think
who
the director apologized for that episode at the beginning of the podcast.
He did, yeah, he did. And it was, I mean, after watching, I was like, man, that was bad.
You know, it's kind of weird that they had that problem. I mean, because they do split their seasons up, you know, you would think they would be able, it would give them room to have to not have to do that. But on the other hand, the other side of that coin is
they
the rest
don't
of their
have time.
The rest of their writing is still so well done.
Yeah, true.
Oh, well, yeah, it's not ruining the series, but you know, the first season was a half season.
Right.
The whole season was mm-hmm. a normal show's half season, and I think that they could take their. I mean. They didn't have to come up with so much storyline.
It felt more like an HBO series. Like one of the things I love about the HBO series is they are half seasons for the most part. They have between 12 and 15 episodes.
Right. They don't have to fill weeks up.
No. And because of that, most of the series I've seen from HBO are really sharp.
Yeah.
Good writing, tight acting, you know, tight production.
Still haven't seen Deadwood. Is that HBO?
That's HBO.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
I agree, and you know, I love to see more and more Battlestar. I'd watch it every day, but you know, at the cost is that you just have to write so much, and you have to put plots in.
And I'm willing to put up with a filler episode now and then, as long as you know.
And when you and you get this, you know, crunch time where you just can't come up with another good idea.
And it's fine if the filler episode is like showing me something new about a character, like with the Black Market episode we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the few episodes where we really focused on the Apollo character.
Right.
Entirely. I hate to be mean to those of you who are big Apollo fans. I think he's dull as dishwater. He's not a very interesting man.
He can do an American accent really well.
Yeah, and he's pretty, but I don't care.
I'm hoping they're about ready to set him up for some more interesting
fat acting?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's obviously... Well, we'll get to it, but I'm just saying that his life has changed differently than the other people, and I hope that the baggage that he's developed over the summer that we haven't seen affects the season coming up and makes him a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we'll come to that. Okay. What did you guys feel about... we have a new... We've always had this tension between Apollo and Starbuck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we've all, it's kind of like moonlighting. Everyone's waiting for them to like just hook up and bang around, right? We've now introduced a new character, the man who was the softball player on the planet, or whatever game that was.
Played High Lie.
Yeah.
He is now on the ship, and they've hooked, Starbuck and him are now a thing.
They're married.
They're married now. Yeah. And they've pretty much come between Apollo's off the.
Well, Apollo is also hooked up with the really beautiful. I can't remember her name.
Which one?
The woman on the bridge.
Yeah. Oh right.
The woman who had the subplot. She was. She's the communications officer for Adama.
She's stunningly
beautiful.
And
she was hooked up with Billy through most of the series until Billy kind of casually died in one episode, which I liked. I liked that character. I was sad that he died, but I liked the episode. You know.
Yeah. That's right. So that has gone away. Do you guys feel that's coming back? Do you think that they need that tension between Starbuck and Apollo to make the series work?
No, I think that you have to wait and see how he plays with this new romantic interest. I mean, you got to see how people react to it and what they can develop out of it.
Oh,
and
I think he's a dead Apollo. Starbuck's husband is dead.
Yeah,
in three episodes.
I think he's a dead man. I'm predicting.
He's a dead man.
I predict a little longer. I think because they need.
He's sick.
Frankly, people don't care. Like, mm-hmm. people don't like him.
No.
So
you're not
need
supposed
to give him a hook.
Yeah.
We need to like him a little bit.
I think people like him, but they really don't want those two to hook up.
All right. Would you like him more if he was a Cylon? If he suddenly revealed himself to be a Cylon?
No. I think that would just be too many. They caught us
and
off
guard. And
which
Greek god would he be then?
He's not a Cylon. he's sick. He can't be a, he's not going to be a Cylon.
He could be faking it.
He's not a Cylon.
He was on a, you know, the irradiated planet.
Not a Cylon.
All right, so we're heading down to the home stretch here. The big things are now the president losing
power,
her power to Baltar, and his conspirator, which is the old Apollo. What's that guy's name?
Yeah,
Richard Hatch.
Yeah.
Baltar is the best storyline to me on this show because it takes the old mythology and it twists it. And what's great is to me is them saying, all right, here's this sort of mwahaha mustache twisting guy on the old Battlestar, and let's see how he got there in the first place.
I like him independently of the first series. Like, I honestly, I just don't care about the mythology twist on this one because I don't think there was enough in the first one for me to really.
I don't see his character.
It was too two dimensional.
I don't see his character at all relating to the old character.
Yeah.
I just feel like they're entirely different things.
Other than the name.
When we went and saw him, saw the different cast members speak, he was so funny when he talked about how he got offered Battlestar Galactica. You know, his agent calls him and says, do you know Battlestar Galactica? And he was one of the few people that said, did I know Battlestar? I knew Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, he loved it.
He was really excited. He goes, who are they offering? Who do they want me
Starbuck,
to be?
Starbuck, Apollo.
Yeah, and he's like, Baltar. He's like, what?
the old guy.
Wait, cape. Wait, you mean, ha, 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 Baltar? They want me to be, what?
The old guy in the cape?
And he is so great. What a great role he is. Yeah, and actually, I'm so excited to see where he goes from here because clearly, to me at least, he now has the chance to redeem himself.
Yes.
And what is that going to be and how much is that going to cost him to do that?
Well, first of all, I don't think they've summed up the baby rebirth visions that he's had with Six.
Right.
No. And I think that's extremely important to the series. They've left it alone. But I want to know what that means because they told him to pretty much go to this planet and, you know, stay there and, you know.
Yeah.
And so what does that mean? What is he now going to be the genesis of something even more destructive, or maybe, you know, maybe the Cylons are the good guys.
Is there any plan at all? The person who gave him all these impressions was the Six in his head. We don't know if she has anything to do with the actual Cylon plans.
Good point. Actually, she could be completely fake.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, we're assuming that she's in contact with...
Yeah.
He had that whole thing about having a chip in his head, and he never did. So.
Right.
Yeah. In season one, I was convinced that it was some sort of emanation, a chip in his head, some sort of plant.
Mm-hmm.
Because the steps they were going through were very classical brainwashing conditioning procedures,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it seemed really clearly an outside source. Season two made me question that.
Okay, chip in his head? Hello. The Cylons, when you brain scan them and cut them open, don't look like chips. So maybe it is a chip in his head, the type of chips that they have in their heads, meaning probably they're biological of some sort.
Well, true, but he could also be a Cylon.
And not knowing.
And, you know, Cylons have communication with the Cylon fleet, right? Maybe that is the communication. Maybe all of them have that blonde chick in their heads talking to them.
I don't buy it. I don't buy it because he was a noted scientist well before.
Boomer has been on the ship for a while.
Also, the other reason why I don't buy it is because we had. I don't know if you saw this episode. There's the episode where Six wakes up on the home planet and Baltar's living in her head.
Ooh.
So if he was just another model, she would have known that just something was screwy.
But what I'm saying is, if it's a chip or an implantation or something, then why would she have the exact same? I mean, they could just be connected because they're both Cylons.
But what I'm saying is, the 12
mm-hmm.
are mass reproduced. That's been established.
Okay.
None of the 12 are just one. You know, it's a line.
But maybe he's the main guy.
He's the 13?
He's the number 12. He's the guy. There's only one of them.
Well,
he's the supreme commander.
Well, we're pretty sure that one of these people we're going to run into is going to be that person. You know, they have not revealed two more of the Cylons yet. Clearly, it's probably because they're people we've already seen.
We say that flexibly because we're not really sure how many they haven't revealed yet.
It's like two or three. It's not more.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody posted it on our forums, and I can't remember.
But clearly, I mean, they're going to. Some of those are going to be people we know. And actually, I wouldn't be surprised if the beautiful communications officer turned out to be Aphrodite. You know, the goddess.
Oh no, they can't put another hidden person in there. It'd be just too.
I think there will be one.
There's going to be one, and it's going to be someone that we would never have expected. You know,
I think that would be just
Adama.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, remember the Hermes guy said that Adama is a Cylon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the question is, which Adama did he mean? You know, that I think that originally that was the twist I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Now, before we get to the final episode, there's one other thing I think is extremely important to, I think, the entire next season, in my opinion, is that there seems to be a revolution going on inside the Cylon community.
Yeah.
We've got Boomer, who woke up back at the Cylon plant, or back at Caprica, mm-hmm. because she got assassinated, so she reawakened, and she found the blonde who got blown up in the original series and got reawakened. And they both decided that they didn't like the way the Cylons were working, and they thought it was...
against God.
Against God. And so they have started a revolution on Caprica, and have gotten people to follow them.
I think they won. I think that's what we're supposed to walk away from the last episode.
Oh, okay.
Because it's the two of them...
Right.
...and the little Weasley PR guy that walk into the tent and say... we are here to protect you.
Right.
And the final preview from the I don't know if any of you remember this. The last episode has a preview of the next season, mm-hmm. right? And it has a voiceover from Six saying, you know, we were wrong. God sent us here to protect you, to make you, to remake you, to remold you, or something like that.
Wow.
You know?
So we will. Do you feel that we're going to learn that the Cylon occupation on this planet has... other motivations than the original Cylon attacks, which were... Okay.
And I suspect... Here's some of the things I suspect. One, there's been a splinter, mm-hmm. right? These are not the Cylons that are occupying this new Caprica.
Right. These are some Cylons.
These are some Cylons that have splintered off the main group. The main group... Because notice we didn't see Lucy Lawless there. And Lucy Lawless is the most rabidly anti-human of the bunch.
Right.
That's the impression I've gotten anyway. The fact that that model ain't there makes me wonder if maybe not all models are in cahoots on this.
Hera.
Or maybe some individual units have gone AWOL.
Right.
You know?
So now the last episode. Baltar wins the election.
Was Jocelyn correct to rig the vote?
Oh, that's right. She tries to rig the vote and then gets caught and decides to come clean, and they then vote Baltar in.
And at first when I was watching that, I'm like, what the hell are you doing? You can't do that, Jocelyn. That's the wrong thing. Like this, that's morally wrong. I wasn't thinking of the fact that, in her mind, she knew if they settle this planet, the Cylons will come and we will die.
But again,
if
why
I lie in this one election? Maybe we can keep running and maybe we'll live.
But at that point, then, if that's true, why don't just go to the military and say, you know what, democracy is over. If we're gonna pretend like a democracy is, I mean, why pretend? We're either gonna have a democracy or we're not.
She had to make a choice, and she ultimately decided democracy was more important.
Mm-hmm. Well, after she got caught.
Well, and also we've already established that the military can't maintain order forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think Adama would be a little bit more capable than Ty.
Okay, so it lasts a month rather than a week.
I think it would have been a mess. Anytime you do a coup like that, it takes an incredible amount of energy. To be a dictator. I mean, it takes a lot of energy to not be a dictator, but it takes a lot more energy to be a dictator. You have to
be on it.
You've got to be
on it. I think that's a different debate, whether keeping a country together by political bullshit is less work than just having an army crack down. I think that's debatable.
Well, the thing about keeping a country working with all the political bullshit is you don't have to worry about people trying to, you know, slit
undermine
your throat at any given moment.
Right.
To the same level. Whereas, I mean, frankly, you know...
Would you say that to Iraqis who have a supposedly democracy going on right
well,
now?
They don't have a democracy.
They don't
have anything
democracy.
Near a democracy.
Well, they just elected somebody.
If they had...
Yeah,
if,
but it's just
yes,
the government.
But the point
exist.
Is... that if they had a democracy, they wouldn't be. I mean, if they had a true democracy, they wouldn't. There wouldn't be the warfare that's going on. They're in war right
now.
You're
crazy.
Okay, look.
Democracy doesn't mean there's not going to be war. There's all sorts of people who get elected and then they get their ass killed and someone else takes over.
No, you're completely misunderstanding the point. If you have a democracy, you're working through democratic channels. If you don't have a democracy, you're killing people. They're two entirely different places.
All right.
The people who are killing people right now, they don't care about trying to convince people to their side. they're coming at it from more of a dictator type of point of view, where they want to tell people what they have to do and enforce it on them.
Okay, we'll discuss that. I don't agree, but we'll discuss it later. All right, so they're on the planet. Cylons show up and take over. So what do you guys feel has to happen in the next season for you for it to work?
It's got
to
be good.
Huge rebellion.
I'm expecting at least three more episodes on the planet.
Right.
Oh, I think it'll go longer than that.
I feel like if there are more than three episodes on the planet, then it's not going to be battles. They need to get back.
I agree, but I'm thinking five.
I think they're going to split. I think they're going to leave some people on the planet so that they can continue to examine issues there. But, I mean, I think that being on the planet and being in a dictator state allows them to examine a lot of issues that are really interesting that they couldn't get otherwise.
Right.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to, on some level, they're always going to keep that connection where there are humans and Cylons working together from this point on. I do think, however, that if you keep Adama up in space without more people on the ship for much longer, it's going to really eviscerate his storyline. So somehow they're going to find a way to get hooked up back with the Battlestar Galactica.
Here's what has to happen to me. You're going to have a couple of episodes of them on the planet having to rebel and rough it and get their ass kicked by Cylons and just show how crappy and how heroic they are, you know, sneaking around, blah, blah, blah. Then they've got to show the struggle of the people on the ships of how to save them, how mm-hmm. desperate they are. They have zero people. They have zero fighter pilots. They have no one to help them. They just have a couple of big ships, and we have to see their the horror that they're in, that they have to go back and save an entire planet. And it's been a year, and they still haven't figured it out. I think the Pegasus has to blow up.
Yeah, the Pegasus will die in the extraction.
Yeah, the Pegasus has got to go. I loved it the way that they didn't blow it up right away, but it's got to go. We have to have Battlestar Galactica be the only Battlestar.
The last hope.
A ragtag.
Exactly.
You know what I think is going to happen?
What's that?
I think you guys clued into something that's really interesting. They may not do this, but I think it's a great idea. You said the Cylons may have split. Mm-hmm. And it would be really interesting if a group of Cylons came and attacked the Cylons that are there.
Yes.
And the Battlestar Galactica uses that attack as a time to come in and extract people and get
possibly
out.
Possibly.
Interesting.
Because there's no freaking way the Battlestar Galactica and Pegasus can stand up to what they've got on that planet.
Mm-hmm. My other prediction is a major character must die in order for them to leave the planet behind. Okay. My mm-hmm. prediction is the major character that will die will be President Jocelyn Elders.
Because she can't.
She will be dead within the first 5 to 8 episodes of the season.
She can't be reelected, do you think? I think her role as a leader must be gone.
Leaving this behind will require a sacrifice, and I think that she has to be the sacrifice.
I think they'd kill Ty if they killed anyone.
I think that Ty.
Ty is too. I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, I think Ty's in danger as well. Mm-hmm. And I think Ty's wife is finally going to really fuck him over on the big.
Yep.
She's going to sell him out.
She's going to sell him out, and then he's going to, you know, take her down and then take out a big, huge chunk of Cylon so people can escape.
Maybe.
He's going down with the ship.
But I feel to me that they have to get. I mean, they had an entire season, or at least the last half of the first season, where it was very important to get this weird mystical arrow to lead us to Earth. And I feel like that they can't. They've left it for so long that they need to get back that within 5 or 6 episodes. They need to get onto the ship and start heading back toward Earth. Otherwise, it's just not. We've kind of lost the Battlestar Galactica feel in a way. We've got a bunch of ships and we're heading to a destination.
Well, we have no more people on New Caprica, on Old Caprica. All of our characters have left that area.
Yeah, it's gone.
If we want to have some planet-bound people, I agree with Peter, it makes sense to have a storyline on New Caprica. I'm just not sure who it'll involve, anyone major.
The chief. The Master Chief, or whatever his name is. The chief engineer.
Maybe they'll pull a Starbuck from the original series. Remember, Starbuck got left on a planet alone for all time.
Did he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's how they killed off the original Star... What it was a... remember when
he got the extra speedy fighter or something?
Remember when Battlestar jumped the shark and it became Battlestar 1984?
Yeah.
And they got all new characters and they actually found Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a group of like these star children that helped rule on the council. They're like these kids who are all like geniuses, and they had some type of weird knowledge of the universe.
I don't remember this at all.
And one of them came to Adama and said, I keep having this weird dream of this man named Starbuck, and I don't know, do you know of the Starbuck? And they do a flashback episode back to the original series where Starbuck is being, you know, battling all these Cylons, and he gets hit, his Viper gets hit, and he crash lands on a planet with another Cylon. And then it becomes like Enemy Mine. He fixes the Cylon and rewires it so it's his friend. And they live on this planet, you know, just trying to survive. And then this woman, they find this freaking... The joke was, they're sitting there, you know, around a campfire. It's been months. And the Cylon says, you know, what can I do to, you know, help you? He goes, you know what you can do to help me? You can go find another human. So the Cylon gets up and just walks off. And he goes, oh, great. And comes back with another human, with a woman that he finds in a cave. And it's this weird space lady. They bang around, have a kid after years and years and years. The Cylons show up to save their other Cylon. And they put the kid on the ship, launch it up, and save the Star Child. But Starbuck has to live the rest of his life alone on this planet.
What happened to the girl?
She dies because the Cylons kill her.
Okay.
So he's alone forever. So who knows? Maybe they'll drop off Cylon.
They're going to bring back Dirk Benedict.
Somehow I'm thinking no.
That's fascinating to me, and it's also fascinating to me that you actually know all of that.
Of course.
So now that – I mean, okay, assuming it's not President Jocelyn Elders, mm-hmm. assuming it's not President
Baltar,
who is the next politically elected leader do you think will be on the series?
Richard Hatch.
I think so.
I don't know. I don't think
– I think it'll go back to Jocelyn.
I think it'll be –
I think Jocelyn will get back.
I think she's dead meat. I don't think she's going
to
last the season.
I don't know how they can. They're going to have to be. If they want her back in power, they're going to have to write something very clever because she screwed up.
I don't think she screwed up. I think people are going to realize, oh, we elected the wrong person.
Right.
But still.
She didn't screw up.
Well, she tried to fix an election.
That never came out.
No one ever realized that.
Oh, really? I thought they released that.
What they said was that there was a flaw with the election.
Oh,
and we have to
okay.
Redo.
I didn't. Yeah, there I was didn't a cover know that. Up. Okay.
And Baltar was like, "I'm going to have an investigation." And I think it was Colonel Ty, or no, it was Adama, who said, "Why? No, I don't think you're going to
oh,
do
okay.
that."
Okay. Okay. So she does. Okay. So they might be able to write her back in.
Yeah, but I want her to be president. You know, I love her, but I don't think it's going to work.
Hmm. All right. She can be president, but I think she's going to stick around.
All right, we need to wrap this up because we do have a bit.
I wouldn't be surprised if she became some sort of very spiritual leader on that side.
Why not?
They're fresh out of priests right now. One priest dead, the other is a Cylon. So.
There you go.
All right, okay. So this time around, our bit is Technobabble. That's right, Technobabble is returned. So, Aaron, would you care to read our Technobabble topic for the week?
I'll read it.
Peter will read it.
Your star system has been destroyed by the Cylons, and the last few surviving humans join together in a ragtag fleet fleeing towards the safety of a mythical planet called Earth. The Cylons find you every 33 minutes, forcing your ships to keep jumping again and again. Your crew is exhausted, and more than a few of your ships faster than light drives are beginning to malfunction. Minutes before your next scheduled jump, your engineer tells you that your ship's FTL drive has broken down, coolant issues are to blame. The engine is overheated and you're low on fuel. A botanical research vessel and a prison barge near you also have broken down. In just a few more ticks of the clock, your 33 minutes will be up. What do you do?
Can I begin?
Sure.
Matt.
I have a commercial break in mind, so I'd love to go and then come back. Commercial.
Okay.
All right, Ray. In our exhausted state, I blearily watched the clock count down, 30 minutes. After another attack, it was going to be impossible to hold a Battlestar together, let alone the fleet. And with our engine shooting off coolant like a sprinkler gone haywire, we only had moments to put together a plan to save ourselves. Grinding the weary crew into action, we began evacuating the botanical ship to the other small vessels around it. The prison barge was going to become more of an issue, as the prisoners would not evacuate quickly or easily. We scanned our surroundings and found a local asteroid field laden with our much-needed fuel reserves. However, mining it and getting it back to the Battlestar was going to cut us down to the wire on time. Plus, the miners were going to have to haul in fuel in the middle of the battle. We began the slow move, shifting the fleet to a defensive position, putting the asteroids between us and where the common attack vector of the Cylons was. After a series of launches, the last of the miners were away, the fighters, most of the pilots on stims, in a guard formation and an FTL vector set. The great ship waited the final minutes while we all scurried around it like ants prepping a hive for a swarm. The chief promised to have the leak shut down and have us fueled in time for launch. We watched the mining ships blast out and make it to the fuel asteroids uneventfully and start their process. 20 minutes left. The evacuations could be completed on the botanical ship in another 15, cutting it to the wire. The prisoner ship had cuddled up to us and was moving prisoners aboard into the brig. We were going to be hard-pressed to contain all of the prisoners, but it needed to be done. Suddenly, a series of things went wrong. A prisoner in line shivved a guard. A mining hose broke, an explosion, and an asteroid shifted by the blast shot on a course right for our venting thruster. All right.
Commercial break.
To be
commercial
continued.
Break. Aaron.
Okay. So, there we were. The minutes counting down. Tick, tick, tick. Status report after status report just confirmed the fact that we were dead in the water. Our ship's armaments were low, and I knew that we couldn't hold off a full-scale attack. But as all great captains know, there's always a way out of every situation. Something clever and... I don't know, clever. Cylons. Cylons. P-S-I. Psy. Psychic. They're psychic. Everyone knows if you name something Psy something, it means it's psychic. So I knew what had to be done.
Sir?
Not now, Lieutenant Johnson. I'm busy.
But, sir...
Quiet! I knew we had been testing a gluon thread synapse amplifiers on the saber-toothed tiger lilies in the lab, and was quite sure it could be modified to interface with humanoids. One humanoid in particular. Her name... Lieutenant Cleo, from Jamaican. A rather rambunctious psychic we had on board. So when the Cylons jumped into range, we sent an amplifier psychic message back to the enemy fleet. We had only one chance, and only power enough to send one word. Sleep.
But, sir...
What is it, Lieutenant Johnson?
Sir, Cylons are spelled with a C. C-Y-L-O-N-S.
What? They're not psychic? Red alert! Red alert! Red alert! Turn the fleet around! Hard starboard! Hard starboard! Well, there you have it. A lesson learned. Before going into battle with an enemy, at least learn how to spell their names. By the way, that's based off of you, Peter. In our only Battlestar Galactica episode, you spelled Cylons as if they were psychic. They're spelled with a C.
That's the history.
Yeah. Goes to show, never trust Peter.
That's right.
I was busy at work this week, so I wrote this in the 30 seconds before we sat down to record.
Excellent.
Frack, I yelled as the rest of the fleet jumped. Looks like we're fracking on our own. Not fracking quite, sir, said my sensors operator. We have a prison ship and a fracking botanical ship off our fracking starboard bow, sir. Fracking great. More fracking mouths to feed. For the next 3 fracking minutes till the Cylons show up, frack. Frack indeed. We sat in silence for a moment. Then came our salvation. Sir, I can't believe it. I can't frackin' believe it. What? Frackin' what? It's a plot hole, sir. It's opening directly frackin' in front of us. Great, make straight for it. Can't, sir. Well, we'll never frackin' make it in time. Frack! Then I had it. Engage the frack drive. It's experimental, sir. Runs off frackin' swear words, and we only have one. Frack! We'll never turn the frack drive on in time. Leave that to me. Get me the frackin' botanical ship. Online, sir. Botanical ship. Dock with a prison ship, and flood it with the contents of your frackin' main cargo hold. Now! But it's filled with frackin' now! And they did. Can you guess what the botanical cargo pod was filled with? That's right. Farmer's gold. Fertilizer. Frackin' shit. Those prisoners invented a few new words and let us power up our frack drive to the point where all 3 ships made it safely through the pothole and about frackin' halfway to Earth.
Excellent.
Wow. Well done. Throw in a couple Felker carbs in there. You really get that thing.
I can barely pronounce frack for some reason. I don't know what the hell's up with that.
Back from commercial.
5 minutes left.
Dun, dun, dun.
A quick blast from three fighters blasted the asteroid from the sky. The riot was quickly and brutally contained. A group of at least 900 prisoners was walled off in the prison vessel, and the door was soldered shut behind them. My only worry was the lone guard who took the brunt of their anger as we shunted the ship into space.
Don't leave me! Please don't leave me!
The miners were ordered back, only half full, when bang! The Cylons arrived just on time from an opposite attack vector from normal.
Look, it's Cylons from an opposite attack vector from normal!
Our fighters screamed into the attack, suffering heavy losses. Our chief working madly as he finally shut down the leak. When he came up with a brilliant plan. Screaming into the ready room, he said, "We have to let the coolant shunt!" And we looked at him through sandy eyes. "Why?" I asked, and he said, "No time!" And asked me, please, to fire the right-hand thrusters. I ordered it done, and he smiled and opened up the coolant into space. Suddenly, like a car with the emergency brake on, the great ship spun speedily on its axis to face the attack. Our coolant was now shunting into the asteroid field. The miners were almost to the ship, a few getting blasted from space, a few noble fighter pilots sacrificing their lives to save them. Captain, can you get us on the other side of the field? So as we began to retrograde, firing all the while, our missiles filling the air like bees. At least less. Everyone was around aboard, and the chief yelled, "Load the coolant tank with a hydrogen compound."
I later
found out the chief was working on a new explosive. Needless to say, we utilized the coolant to shunt the hydrogen mixture into the asteroid field and fired a missile after it. The resulting explosion lit up space with the brightest light you've ever seen. However, we didn't see it because we were away to our next jump point and perhaps a little rest.
Mmm.
Yay!
Very dramatic.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yay! Yay.
Well, that was our Battlestar Season 2
recap.
Recap episode. Which
and
I thought was great.
New episode for the first episode for the new season begins this Friday.
Friday, October 6th. 9 p.m. So this, I will get this episode out tomorrow morning so that people can hear it in time.
A very special gathering here, and all of us will sit down and watch Battlestar Galactica.
Cool. All right. Anything else?
Okay. No.
That's it.
All righty. Bye. Have a good geek week, everybody.
Geek it out.
Be good.
Rock it out.